Good morning. Today is December 10th. We are here at United Orthodox Synagogues of Houston, Texas, for our Lunch and Learn on Parshat HaShavua. Today we're going to read, we're going to study one part of Parshat Vayeshev. That's actually the question we're going to ask to start off with is similar to last week's question. Last week, if you recall, we studied the episode where Yaakov was preparing to meet up with Esav after a 20-year separation from each other. And there was one chapter that talked to us about Yaakov's preparation to meet Esav, and then there was the actual meeting. But in between, there was the fight with the mystery person, angel, or different opinions as to who it was, right? And we asked a couple of questions. What is that story, first of all, doing right there in the middle? And why did Yaakov start off afraid and end up not afraid? And why did what changed Esav's mind? Apparently, Esav was coming to fight and maybe even kill Yaakov. So the real question was, why is that story intervening, the story of the meeting between Yaakov and the mystery person? Why did that story intervene between the preparation and the actual meeting? And today we have a similar question. We're going to start off with the story where the brothers decide that they are going to sell Yosef. So let's turn to page 78. Let's follow what happens here in the narrative. The beginning of the parsha, we learn that Yosef's brothers don't really like him. Actually, turn back to 77 for a second. I just wanted to point out something which I think is a common misconception of the text. But if you look clearly, we get a different picture from what we're normally told. So I'll ask you, why did the brothers hate Yosef?
He was their father's favorite.
Okay, his father's favored him.
He was the son of a woman he loved very much.
So let's look at the beginning of the parsha. Right, Yaakov is sitting in Canaan, living in Canaan, and all the children are there. And in verse 3, Yaakov, who is called here Yisrael, Ahav et Yosef mikol banav, he likes Yosef better than all of them. And it tells us why. And he made him the coat. Vayiru echav ki oto ahav avihem mikol echav vayisnu'u oto v'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. And then they realized that the father loved Yosef more, and they hated him. Then look what it says. Vayachalom Yosef chalom vayagi le'echav vayosifu odsnu oto. He had a dream, and all he did was tell his brothers that he had a dream. There's no indication here that he told them what was in the dream. He just told them that he had a dream, and they hated him even more. And then he tells them what the dream was, and that's when the real trouble started. So we often blame the hatred on the dream, but the dream is not what caused the hatred. It seems like the favoring caused the hatred, and then even when he told them he had a dream, he never even told them what the dream was, at least at first. And they hated him even more. So Yosef was in trouble early on. What's the question?
When you first said that they hated him, you're not quite sure if it was the father or the son they hated.
Let's see what the text says.
It says, father loved him more than any of his brothers. They hated him, so they could not speak a friendly word to him. But it doesn't say who they hated.
That's true.
They could have hated his father for favoring the son.
Right. Well, it sounds like they certainly, on some level, resented it. Okay. So now he has another dream, and they don't like this whole thing that's going on. So the brothers go out to shepherd their father's, to pasture their father's flock, we're on verse 12. And then he sends Yosef, go check them out.
Why did he have to tell them it's Chalamot? He knew that it will provoke them. And you already felt already this.
It could be, the Torah could be alluding to some sort of fault on behalf, on Yosef's part as well. Correct. He provoked them. He shouldn't have done it. Correct. Maybe. Okay. The brothers see him coming. Verse 18. Vayomu ish el achiv, verse 19, hinei bala chalamot halazeb ba, the master of the dreams is coming. Viata lechu v'nahargehu v'nashlichehu be'echad haborot. Let's kill him, and then we'll throw him into one of the pits, and we'll say, chaya ra'a achaltuhu, achalatuhu. A wild animal ate him. Vayishmaru uvein, vayatzilehu miyadam, vayomer lo nakenu nafesh. Let's not kill him, let's do this. Right, let's just throw him into one of the pits and just not kill him. And whatever happens, happens. Cast him into a pit out in the wilderness, but do not touch him yourselves. Intend to save him from them and restore him to his father. What was Reuven's plan? Reuven's plan was to later on come back, take him out, and return him to his father. And so they did that. Vayeshvu lechol lechem, vayisu einehem, they're sitting and eating, and they see this caravan of Yishmaelites coming. And then, why are we going to kill him? Meaning, even he knows the truth. If we leave him here, he's going to die. And it's just the same as killing him. So let's not kill him. Let's sell him to this group of Yishmaelim. And we will at least not be responsible for killing him. V'yadenu al tihi vo, ki achinu bisarenu hu v'yishmuecha. They listen to him, and they take him out of the pit, and they sell him. Okay, now Reuven comes back to the pit. Not sure where he was this time. It's a good question. Reuven comes back to the pit. He sees that he's gone, and he tears his clothes. Then he goes back to his brothers. V'yashav elecha v'yomer hayelan enu v'ani ana aniba. Where is he? And then they don't tell him. It's fascinating. Reuven may be thinking the worst. He doesn't know where he is. And the brothers don't tell him that we sold him. The boy is gone, and what am I to do? Then they took Joseph's tunic, slaughtered a kid, and dipped the tunic in the blood. They had the ornament, the tunic, taken to their father, and they said, "We found this, please examine it. Is it your son's tunic or not?" Right? Not even, is it our brother's tunic? Right, the language is so distant. Is it your son's? He recognized it and said, "My son's tunic, a savage beast devoured him. Joseph was torn by the beast." Okay, good. Then, what would we expect to hear next in the story? Don't turn the page. What would we expect to hear next in the story?
Joseph, you need this.
Yeah.
Why did Reuben not go along with his brothers to not kill him?
No, Reuben was the one who wanted to save him.
Yes, he
didn't want to kill him.
Why not?
Because he knew something.
He felt it was wrong. He felt it was wrong to kill him. They didn't like him very much. They're willing to, right? There's a difference in not liking a guy and wanting to have him out of your midst and plotting to kill him.
You also had in the previous parsha talked about some of the brothers were hot-headed.
Yeah,
that's so true. Right?
He's the firstborn of them.
True.
And they have like
one at a time.
No, so you know that some of them were hot-headed, some of them were level-headed.
So Reuben was more or less the comma.
It seems that way.
Calmed everybody down.
It seems that way. Yeah. Okay, so what would you expect to hear next in the story?
Joseph in Egypt.
Yeah, Joseph in Egypt. Right? Yosef's on his way to Egypt. You would expect to hear Yosef's in Egypt, but you don't hear that. Now we have this intervening story on page 80, chapter 38. This is the famous story of Yehuda and Tamar. It intervenes, and then quickly flip the page to page 82, Perek Lamitet, V'Yosef Hurad Mitzrayimah. Then we come back to the Joseph story. So we have this interruption, which seems to break up the story of, here's a story. Yosef upsets his brothers. First they plot to kill him. Then they say, let's throw him in the pit. Then they say, let's sell him. And then we would expect to hear, and he ended up in Egypt. But then, instead, we don't hear that right away. We have this intervening story.
To give a sense of time goes by.
So maybe it was concurrent.
Time goes by. You know how much time this Yehuda story took? He had three children in the meantime.
Oh.
He had three children in the midst of the story. And one of them, not until he had two children, two of them are old enough to marry Tamar.
Oh, wow.
So this is a 20-some-odd year event, at least, going on. It didn't take, I can't imagine, it take Yosef 20 years to get to Egypt?
No, no.
They married pretty young.
Doesn't make a difference.
So it's 15.
Let's assume, one second, there were two brothers. One second, Daniel, you're right. Daniel, you're right. But let's say the boys were at least 12 before they could marry, so it's 20 years at least. It could have been more, but it's at least 20 years. Because you assume Yehuda's children are not going to marry a woman until they're at least 12 or 13, right? So we're dealing with a 20-year story here. So it's a 20-year interruption. Now, so what's going on? Why is this story right in the middle? What's the point? Okay, so we're going to look at a couple of options as to because almost all the commentaries are struggle with this question.
One point would be to show how sensitive Judaism is to the right of survivorship.
So tell the story after.
Oh, I thought to contrast with how they trashed.
Oh, I
see. Brother's future.
Uh-huh.
Here's another example of brothers who were trying to preserve, should have been trying to preserve the children of their deceased brother, who were not born.
What?
Again.
Okay. I'm saying that this Tamar story with Judah is illustrative of Judaism's interest in establishing a house and maintaining the family.
Where do we see there's an interest in maintaining the family?
The obligation to marry.
Ah, so one brother after the other brother.
Exactly.
Right. So that's very interesting, because what Scott is saying is very different than what the other commentaries are saying. Because the truth is, why is Tamar's lineage not maintained, or the brother's lineage not maintained properly? Why does Yehuda
have to step in?
Why does Tamar arrange things for Yehuda to step in? Because Yehuda won't give the third son. Right? Let's just look very quickly, right? Yehuda, Vayi Be'et Ahi, Vayi Yehuda Me'et Achav, Vayi Ad Ish Adulami, Ushmo Chira, Vayar Sham Yehuda Bat Ish Kanani, Ushmo Shua, Vikacha. We don't even know his wife's name. He marries Shua's daughter. And he has a son called Er, and another son then called Onen, and a third son called Shelah. Then what happens? Er is the oldest one. He does Vayikach Yehuda Isha LeEr B'choro U'Shema Tamar. So Yehuda's oldest son, Er, marries Tamar. We don't know why, but we don't know what. Er did something wrong,
and
God kills him. We don't know why. It does not tell us why. In verse 7, we do not know why Er dies, but he does. Then, Vayomer Yehuda Onan Bo El Eshet Achicha, build up your brother's name, right? Classic Yibum, leveret marriage, and have children from her. Onan does not like this idea one bit, because he realizes that the children will not really be considered his, even though biologically they are. They're only to build up the name of his brother. So it's interesting, we have a subplot of brotherly hatred again. Or not brotherly hatred, brotherly resentment again in the story. He says, I'm not doing this. And he refuses to get her pregnant. And that God doesn't like in verse 10. Vayira ve'enei Hashem asher asa vayamet gamoto. He's also dead. So now what we have on our hands, we have what the Gemara calls Isha Katlanit. We have a deaf woman. Anyone who marries this woman dies. Now, we know that they're dying because of sin. Er, we don't know his sin, but he didn't do something. We know he died because of a sin, meaning it's not Tamar's fault. Onan, also we know, died because of his sin. It's not Tamar's fault. But who doesn't know any of this? Yehuda doesn't know any of this. And so he says, I am not giving Shelah to her because I don't want him to die. Every time one of my sons marries this woman,
Black Widow,
she dies, right? That's called Isha Katlanit.
Yeah.
She's a murderous woman. Anyone who marries her dies. The Gemara talks about this. And there's even the possibility that a woman who has two husbands who die should not marry again.
Yeah, but he said, wait till it grows up.
Yeah, but let's keep reading. Tamar doesn't believe him. Tamar thinks for sure
that she's not.
That because what happens? Let's see what happens. Verse 12. Vayirbu hayamim vatamat bat shua eshet yuda vayinachem yuda vayal al ginzei tzono hu v'chira re'eu halami. She realizes that it's not happening in verse 14. Ki ra'ata ki gadal sheila v'hi lo netzna lo li'isha. The end of 14. Tamar realizes that he does not want to do this. And he does not give Sheila. Okay?
He doesn't say that Sheila got married.
But
he's
does
still available.
But Tamar is convinced that she's not getting him.
Right.
So she says, now I'm stuck. Okay. And so now she gets into the whole, now she seduces. She seduces, or she sets herself up to look like she's a prostitute, and Yehuda gets her pregnant. Okay?
Why was
always
it
a man.
So important for her to have Zerah from that? It was the father was interested that the Yehuda continued, but what did she care?
She felt it was her responsibility to do the same thing. She's right. She's right. Yehuda's wrong here. Yehuda says, I'm not giving. Okay? So not only do we have Yehuda not giving Sheila, we then have Yehuda who sleeps with Tamar, and then when he finds out that Tamar's pregnant, he says we have to take her out and kill her because she's acted like a prostitute. And then what happens? She says, okay, that's fine, but I just want to show everyone
who did it?
The collateral. That the money that was sent to me to secure my services, and right away Yehuda recognizes that it's his stuff, and he says Sadkami Meni, and he realizes that she's wrong. So what is this story doing in the middle of the of this event? So first of all, this one basic straightforward answer is given by Rashi. Rashi says at the beginning of this story, when it says, Vayhiba etahi vayered Yehuda, it was at that time, and Yehuda went down. So it doesn't mean physically that he went down to live in a place that was geographically lower. Rashi says, Vayered Yehuda, lama nismecha parsha zo lekan. That's our question, right? Why is this story of Yehuda and Tamar juxtaposed to this event? Presumably, you could have put it before, you could have put it after. Rashi is denying the fact that it's only here because that's when it happened. Now, that may be an answer, but the Torah often will take a story that happens in one place and move it somewhere else so we could keep continuity of the other story. So Rashi's saying the fact that this event may have happened, it may be that Yehuda went down to live in this new place after the event of the sale of Yosef, but that's not enough of a reason, Rashi's saying, to interrupt what is obviously a continuing story of Yosef being sold and Yosef ending up in Egypt. So something else is going on here. What's going on here, says Rashi? V'hifsik b'parsha shel Yosef. Rashi finishes the question. Why is this story here interrupting in the story of Yosef? L'lamed, to teach us. Shehoriduhu echav migdulato. That the brothers diminished Yehuda's stature. Apparently Yehuda was a leader. He diminished their stature. Why? What does it say? Kishera'u b'tzarat avihem. When they saw how broken up Yaakov was, that Yosef is missing. Amru, they said, Ata amarta l'machro. You told us to sell him. Ilu amarta l'hashivo hayinu shomim l'cha. Had you told us to return him to his family, we would have listened to you. This is your fault, Yehuda. So Vayer Yehuda could mean two things. It could mean that he actually stayed with them, but he was diminished in stature. But it also maybe even more likely means that they shunned him and he actually moved away from them.
Because of Tamar's story?
No.
Because of Joseph?
No, this is before. Because they said, you were the one who said, sell him.
Steal.
Get him out of the
pit.
When
Yehuda the eldest?
And sell him. Get him out of the pit and sell him.
Was Yehuda the eldest?
No, Reuben's the eldest. And had you told us, that's why the story is here. Because it's not an interruption. It's a continuation. The direct continuation of this event is Yehuda loses his stature. And so then he physically separates himself. And what happened? Oh, that's when he meets this Kanani guy. He meets his wife. He gets married. And all the other stuff follows up. But it's not really an interruption. Well, it is an interruption, but we need to have the interruption to know that Yehuda was diminished in stature. That's one approach. There's an approach that I think, which I find to be much more interesting. Okay? And that is the approach suggested by the Midrash. Okay? I'll read you a Midrash, and then we'll see if we can figure out what it means. Vayhi ba'etahi, says the Midrash, ma ketiv lemala min ha'inyan. Why is this written here? What's written here have to do with the story? That's the Midrash, the same question that Rashi asked. What does this story of Yehuda and Tamar have to do with the story of the sale of Yosef, which is the main theme of what we're talking about? V'hamidyanim machru oto el Mitzrayim. Lo hayat tzarich lomar ela v'Yosef hurad Mitzrayim. Why do we have to have this whole story, which ends up with the Mitzrim sell the Kananim selling him? We could have just had the beginning of chapter 39. V'Yosef hurad Mitzrayim. Yosef goes down to Egypt. Why are these two parshiot juxtaposed? And we have two opinions three opinions actually in the Midrash. One, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar amar, kidei lesmoch yirida liyirida. We want to juxtapose Yehuda going down to Yosef going down. Now, what does that mean? That's all the Midrash says. It's up to us now to figure it out. What does that mean?
The leaders of the family character, but the other one went down physically to Egypt.
No. So then what's the connection?
I think that Yehuda was the leader of the family, where Yosef will be the leader for the next generation.
Okay, so maybe it's juxtaposed to show that Yehuda lost his leadership position, as Rashi just said, which directly leads to Yosef
rising,
right, to becoming the leader later on when he ends up feeding the whole family and becoming the leader of Egypt and ultimately the leader of the family. Okay, very good.
Yosef,
it could be.
Yosef was the glue holding the brothers together.
Okay, now both of these things we know from the story. We have to remember, we're leaving you. We have to make sure we keep Yehuda in mind here. Okay, so it could be that what the Midrash is saying is this is midah keneged midah.
I was just saying penitence.
Right. This is measure for measure. You Yehuda, at least if we accept Rashi, you Yehuda had in your power to return Yosef to his brothers, and you blew it. And so because of you, he's separate from them. And now you're also separate from them. Vayhiba etahi vayered Yehuda. Yehuda's also doesn't only mean that he was emotionally or psychologically separate from his brother. He actually moved away. This event went so badly, and he was the one who was blamed, that he physically had to separate himself from his family. Measure for measure.
Maybe.
You caused one brother to be separated from the family, and now you are another brother. You're also going to be separated from the family.
Maybe it was guilt. Judah lost two sons. He doesn't seem to be all that broken up about it in
right.
comparison to Jacob.
Okay, good. So that's a good point. I think that's another reason to say this is midah keneged midah. What does Yaakov think happened to Yosef? Thinks he's dead.
Dead.
Yaakov thinks he's dead. So here we have midah keneged midah. You caused your father to think that his son is dead. Your sons are going to die. And he loses two sons. There are a lot of hints in this story that lead us to the conclusion that this story is there to give Yehuda instead of the Torah telling us outright that God punished Yehuda for his participation in the sale of Yosef, instead, the Torah gives us these stories to hint to us. But the more we go through it, the more we realize the hints are very obvious. First of all, the language hint. At the beginning of chapter 38 on verse 80, Vayered Yehuda, Yehuda physically moved away from his brothers. And the beginning of chapter 39 on page 82, the Yosef who rod Mitzrayimah. Yosef went down to Egypt. It's the same root. It's the same root.
But here it's a voluntary. Yehuda voluntarily separated.
No, not according to Rashi. According to Rashi.
The poal vayered.
Yes.
He's actively doing it.
Why? But why did he actively move away? Because his brother shunned him. He had to go away.
So he separated himself. But
first, no, it's a two-stage process. First, his brothers shunned him and blamed him for this whole debacle and their father being heartbroken.
I don't see where the brothers shunned him.
Correct.
Correct.
It's not in the text.
But I don't see.
But you have to ask the question, though. Then why would Yehuda move away?
He felt guilty.
He felt guilty.
Fine. One or the other. He physically, either he felt guilty.
Removed himself.
Correct. Of course, there's a difference.
Close to yourself.
Of course.
That he physically did not remove and went to the home.
Right. But let's assume you're right. Why did Yehuda physically remove himself?
Because his brothers did not want to have with him anything.
Okay. So that, right. So in direct result of his sale of Yosef, this is his either self-inflicted punishment or inflicted by the brothers or God's way of arranging things. But correct, you're right.
But I have a question. The brothers wanted to kill him. Yehuda said put him in the pit.
No, they've already been in three stages. First they said let's kill him.
Right, I'm sorry. And Yehuda already...
Reuven says put him in the pit.
And Yehuda sold him. So the brothers were willing to kill him. He was willing to sell him. The better
of course, people, better of course, the brothers at this point are going to blame somebody else.
But either way, he was already in the pit.
Well,
let's look at another hint.
Why did he return to the pit?
Let's look in this section to indicate that here we are talking about a midah keneged midah. The next opinion in the midrash. So that is the connection of Hurad. And Vayev. Next. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Kedei Lismoch Haker Lehaker. In order to connect the two times in this story where it's recognize this.
What is the word?
Haker. Lehakir. Both of them are care. What happens? What?
With the half.
Yes. Let's see what happens. What happens when the brothers take the coat? Let's look at the language carefully. The brothers take the coat to the father. I will show you. And, I will show you. Hold on 1 second. It says in 32, they put the coat in the blood. And in 33, they bring it to Yaakov. Okay. Vayomu zot matzanu haker na. Look at 32. Haker na on page 79, verse 32. They put it in the blood. They had the ornamental tunic taken to their father, and they said, zot matzanu, we found this. Haker na. Do you recognize it? Is this Yosef's coat? Okay. Haker na. Now, what happens after Tamar becomes pregnant from Yehuda, and Yehuda says, you are to be killed. She says, that's fine, but what happens?
She gives the money.
Look at Pasuk 25. It's the exact same language. And she was being brought out. She sent this message to her father-in-law. I am with child, and the man to whom these belong. And she added, Hakerna. Do you recognize this? The exact same words. Exact same words that the brothers said to Yosef, to Yaakov. Okay, it's hard to suggest that that is just a coincidence in the Torah.
No.
Right? That it is the exact same words.
Yeah.
So again, we have this notion.
That's a proof.
That this whole story does in fact interrupt, but it interrupts to teach us that God is sending either us a message or Yehuda a message that Yehuda is guilty. But now he does tshuva, because what does he do at the very next? Vayaker Yehuda, he recognizes it, and he says, Vayomer tzadkami meni, you are more righteous than I am. By the way, there's another hint, which the Midrash does not mention. Okay? also really amazing. This is a lot of this material comes from Yeshayahu Leibowitz. It's a great book. Sheva Shanim Shel Sichot Al Parshat HaShavua. 7 years worth of classes that he gave on the Parshat HaShavua in one small volume of 960 pages. Okay? Listen to this. In the story of the selling of Yosef, right, we have the following. Yehuda, what does, let's look at chapter 20, 38, verse 20. On page 81. Vayishlach Yehuda
et
gedei ha'izim biyad re'ehu ha'adulami lakachat ha'eravon miyad ha'isha v'lo matzah. He sends this animal to get his stuff back, right? I gave her this stuff as a as sort of a collateral for her services. I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. Right? So he gives her the collateral. Now he wants it back. So what does he send to her? Gidei ha'izim. He sends to her something we call a kid, and he sends it through his friend. And then, what's the problem? There's no prostitute who resembles the description that Yehuda gave. That's when we realize that Yehuda's in trouble. Now, what happens? Now go to the story. Go back to the story. Go back to the story where they kill the animal and dip it in the blood. What do they kill?
A
seir is in, 31. Then they took Joseph's tunic, slaughtered a kid, and dipped the same animal, that is the same type of animal, that is used to fool Yaakov. All right, close enough, I think, right? Close enough, I think, to be another sign that there's a connection between the sale of Yosef and the story of Yehuda. So far we have the Vayered Yehuda Me'et Echav and Vayered and Vehurad, right? The connection between Yehuda going down and Yosef being taken down. Hakerna, the exact same language. And now we have this additional usage of Gedi Ha'izim or Seir Ha'izim in terms of the animal.
And the blood connection. There's
no blood on the animal that Yehuda sends her. It's a live animal. Okay? So that's, I think that's very, very interesting in terms of understanding. So that according to some, is the answer to the question. Why does this story interrupt between the two halves of the story? Yosef being sold and Yosef going to Egypt? Because it's to tell us Yehuda's guilt in the story, and how sort of he is being taught midah keneged midah on some level, right? Also, there's another thing, right? He fools Tamar into thinking Tamar fools him, and he fools his father. Also, midah keneged midah. This is, by the way, very similar to Yaakov. Yaakov fools Esav and his father to get the bracha, and then he is fooled when Leah is switched to him out instead of Rachel. So this theme of
bait and switch,
right?
Bait and
of deception is, and so here we have a very clear example. He fools his father, and he is being fooled by Tamar as well. And again, don't forget the fact that he lost two sons in this. Which also is hard to ignore, considering that he tried to convince his father that he lost two sons, that he lost a son.
But you can look at the whole incident; it's not such a big deal. He didn't know, and he's not guilty, and it could have been like I didn't know, and then recognize a child, and then.
No. He may have not done anything wrong vis-a-vis Tamar, but he did something wrong vis-a-vis his brother. And this whole story with Tamar is his punishment for what he did for his brother. Correct. Not necessarily for what he did. Technically speaking, although he may have done something wrong with Tamar, right? He was not willing to give his third son to Tamar, at least according to what Tamar felt.
He was afraid that he'll die. And it's also fatherly.
He's a father, right?
And, oh, all right, although...
So we had a Zerah, and he should be happy.
But he was very embarrassed.
And he's willing to have Tamar put to death.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Until he's for being
that's
a tough one. Right, and then he realized no, she wasn't. By the way, this teaches us something interesting that we compare the story of Yehuda and Tamar to Yibum, to levirate marriage, right? But it seems that back this is before the Torah was given that levirate marriage Yibum when once the Torah was given. Yibum only applies to a brother, right? A man and a woman get married, the husband dies without them having children, the brother has to marry the widow, right? But here we see who is also legitimate.
The son.
Yehuda, the father.
Father, yeah.
Where that changes when the Torah is given, right? Because I'm saying, but after, it's not, in Tamar's mind, she's not causing Yehuda to sin. She's entitled to Yehuda. Because once Yehuda withholds the, because back then it seems that way. It seems that way. Back then it was not only the brother who was allowed to marry. Normally, a brother-in-law cannot marry a sister-in-law. That's not allowed. Only in the case of Yibum can a brother marry a sister-in-law. Now, a father-in-law is not allowed to marry a daughter-in-law. But back then it seems like, based on what Tamar did, that was a legitimate way to build up the family name. So Tamar, right, because at the end, how come Yehuda didn't say, what are you doing? How could you trick me into doing this? I'm your father-in-law. That doesn't, meaning she's not guilty anymore.
Because you have more than one wife then.
She's not guilty. It's not only one wife. You're allowed to marry your daughter-in-law.
I know.
That's a big difference. It's a big difference, right? Yeah. So back then, it seems the laws of Yibum were different than the laws of Yibum post the Torah being given. But post-determining, it was only the brother-in-law, who normally is not allowed to marry the sister-in-law, who is allowed in that case. Okay.
Can we go back to the Seven Commandments?
On some level. On some level. Okay, I want to get to the Haftorah real quick, and then I have to leave. I want to make sure I don't disappoint Shula a second time. So the Haftorah this week is from Amos. So let's quickly turn to Amos. Amos begins, it's chapter 2 of Amos, so it begins on page 1311. So there's one clear connection between the Haftorah and the Parsha, where it says, Komar Hashem al shlosha pishei Moav al arba lo ashivenu, and what's the sin? The sin is... No, there's more. Hold on second. The pasuk is as follows. Al shoshah pitzei yehuda, al machram bekesef tzadik. That's the pasuk in the Haftarah, that you sold a tzadik for money. And the commentaries explain, the commentaries explain that to mean the sale of Yosef HaTzadik. Right, Yosef is often referred to Yosef HaTzadik. Thus said the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel, for four I will not revoke it, because they had sold for silver those whose cause was just. So that's the most obvious connection, but there's another really neat connection in this story between Amos and Parshat HaShavua. For example, in the next pasuk, it says on page 13:12, Hashoafim al afar eretz birosh dalim v'derech anavim yatu v'ish v'aviv yelchu el hanara. Right, the sin was the sin that the father took the son to the same girl, to the prostitute. Right, the father's showing the son the ropes. That's how bad it got. So it could be that there's a compare and contrast here, right? Because remember, the son and father, right? The father takes the son to the prostitute. So what's going on? It could be that's contrasting it to another story in our parsha. What happens right as soon as Yosef gets down to Mitzrayim? Right away, who is he sold to?
Potiphar,
and we learn that as soon as he gets there, Potiphar's wife seduces Yosef. Now, let me read you the Gemara, because a lot of us don't know the Gemara on this. The Gemara says as follows. Vayhi kayom hazeh vayavo habayta lasot melachto. It was on this day, right? And he comes home to do his work. Lasot melachto. Boto sha'a ba dimut diokno shel aviv v'nirata lo b'chalom. He sees his father's image. The Gemara says, Yosef sees his father's image in his face and immediately stops Potiphar's advances. Okay? In fact, the Gemara says that really when Yosef came home, he had every intention of sleeping with Potiphar. But then, just like Potiphar had every intention of seducing him, he had every intention of Potiphar's wife. He had every intention of sleeping with Potiphar's wife. And then he sees his father's image in his face, Yaakov's image, in his mind's eye, and he says, oh no, my father, the honor of my father will be so disappointed, I can't do it. So some suggest that that's why the Haftorah is, that's the connection to Haftorah. It's a contrasting image. In the Haftorah, we see the father taking the son to harlotry, to Znut. And in our Parsha, if you accept this notion that what stopped Yosef was his father's face or his father's memory, there we have the father stopping the son from doing Znut. So it could be that it's not a comparison, it's a contrasting image to see how bad things got in the time of Amos, but how the relation between Yosef and his father was so different that stopped him from sinning, while in Amos, it was the father who was the actual conduit, or the escort, or the agent, if you will, to the sin. There could be some other connections as well, but those are two connections between the Parsha and the Haftorah.
Where does it say that he saw his...
That's the Gemara. That's the Gemara. I'm not sure if there's a hint in the text. Okay, yes, Yashikosh, everybody.